A tug of war on Wall Street as investors sorted through a mixed bag of corporate results, and sentiment took a late day hit as British lawmakers rejected a plan to fast-track the latest Brexit proposal. The Dow, S&P 500, and NASDAQ all gave up gains to finish with down arrows. It was a mixed bag for earnings released on Tuesday. McDonald's missed profit estimates for the first time in 2 years. U.S. traffic was negative as customers went to rivals for chicken sandwiches, plant-based burgers, and Wendy's started selling breakfast.
Possible good news for those suffering from Alzheimer's and for family members taking care of them. Biotech company Biogen announced Tuesday it is planning to seek regulatory approval for an experimental treatment that is said at high doses improved cognition and function such as memory, orientation, and language. This is a startling reversal on a drug that at first seemed to be so unsuccessful that Biogen stopped 2 studies. But after looking at data from more patients, Biogen said it realized the treatment did have a positive impact on those testing out the drug. That development set the stock on fire. Shares of Biogen soared nearly 40% on Tuesday.
Additional charges have been brought against 11 wealthy parents, including Full House star Lori Loughlin, along with former university athletic officials and others accused of participating in the largest U.S. college admission scam ever uncovered. That's according to a revised indictment on Tuesday. The new charges brought by federal prosecutors add to the potential maximum prison terms each of the 11 parents face if convicted. All of them have previously pleaded not guilty and are awaiting trial.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's October the 23rd, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We've got another business day getting underway here. Lots going on around the world and right here in Chicago, of course. Another day off the job for Chicago teachers as students, now day 5 out of the classrooms in Chicago. We'll keep monitoring that big story throughout the morning, throughout this 5 o'clock hour, as well as we check business news to the markets in just a minute and some headlines from business. But on the program today, we're going to focus in on earnings, deluge of earnings yesterday, and we'll check in with Shiraz Mian, who is the director of research at Zacks Equity Research, to talk a little bit about what we're seeing in some of these earnings, how it affects the broader market, and your investments as well. Shiraz will join us here momentarily in the 5 o'clock hour. First up, a little bit later in the program, there's this news that J.P. Morgan wants to hire people with criminal backgrounds, and it's a trend that's happening all across the country. So we thought we'd bring in Andy Challenger from Challenger Gray and Christmas in Chicago, the outplacement firm, to talk a little bit about the pluses and minuses of hiring people with criminal backgrounds in a tight job market. Andy will join us at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk as we look at the futures in negative territory this morning, but not by a whole lot. As we head to the opening bell later this morning, Dow futures are off about 17 points. NASDAQ futures off just a fraction. Same story on the S&P this morning. In Europe, markets are generally mixed. In London, higher by nearly 0.5%. The FTSE is up about 38 points. In Germany, up just a fraction. In France, off nearly 0.5%, down nearly 22 points on the CAC. In Asia, the market day ending mixed as well. In Japan, higher by about a third. The Nikkei up 76 points. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng down nearly 219 points. In China, markets off by nearly 0.5%, and oil is trading at about $53.96 a barrel. As we begin this morning, some headlines. Boeing is making a leadership change as it tries to get the 737 MAX back in the air. The company announced that Kevin McAllister will be replaced as the CEO of its commercial airline division. Stan Deal, the head of Boeing Global Services, will take over the role. The 737 MAX grounded after 2 fatal crashes. More than 340 people dead in just a span of about 6 months. Earlier this month, Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg lost his role as board chairman in order to focus his efforts on getting the MAX planes back into service. SoftBank is taking control of WeWork and providing the struggling office space startup with $5 billion in new financing. Under the deal announced Tuesday night, Japan's tech giant SoftBank will own about 80% of WeWork. The SoftBank CEO will be appointed chair of WeWork's board of directors. WeWork has been frantically hunting for cash since its attempt to go public fell flat last month. Let's begin this morning with the earnings numbers that we've been seeing yesterday. So many earnings reports, hard to keep track of them. But there is one man who watches it all, Shiraz Mian, who is the director of research at Zacks Equity Research, is on the phone with us this morning. Back on the opening bell, Zach, Shiraz, good morning. Welcome back.
Glad to be back, Steve.
As I mentioned, yesterday was a busy day. We highlighted one of them in the opening montage of the program this morning, McDonald's. Having a little bit of a surprise there for the first time in 2 years.
That's right. Yeah, McDonald's has had a pretty impressive run over the past year, and it's hard to sustain that kind of momentum on a continuous basis. Same-store sales, while still very strong, weren't as good as what the market has priced in, and that was the primary reason for the pullback in the stock and also the disappointment in the results. But overall, McDonald's results and also the broad results, we have about a fifth of the S&P 500 that have reported already. Results have been good enough. They're not great, but they are not as bad as many in the market had been fearing as well.
You know, talk to us a little bit more about that. So the market was expecting what and we're getting what specifically?
So the expectation was for about 5% decline in earnings, about 4% growth in revenues. And we are coming about in line with those results. But even more than the growth rate for the September quarter, the fear was that all of these macro aggregate forces that have been in play, economic weakness abroad, the global trade issue, the never-ending Brexit story, that the companies overall in a major way will provide negative guidance for Q4 and for 2020. And what we are seeing in the results that we have seen already, that is not the case. There is a fair number of companies that are guiding lower, but the flood of warnings that some in the market appeared to fear has not taken place.
Yeah, and Shiraz, that some of the negative revisions in some of those guidance reports you're talking about are about in line with what we've seen in past quarters. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a fair assessment. In the run-up to this reporting season, the tone and substance of economic data, both here in the U.S. and also abroad, particularly Europe, China, and other emerging markets, had significantly turned down. And this was driving the fear, as I mentioned earlier, that we will have a lot more negative guidance than the norm. But that has not happened. And that is the reassuring part of the Q3 earnings season. By the way, yesterday was a busy day, but today is even busier. We have more than 40 S&P 500 companies reporting throughout the day, including Boeing and Caterpillar this morning.
Yeah, and we know from past, Boeing and Caterpillar can really hit the markets heavily if they don't perform well. I know Boeing, in just in the last couple of weeks, has shown us just how negative it can negatively impact the Dow.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a big wedge. It's a big company. It is the biggest manufacturing exporter in the country. My sense is that sentiment on the stock is down so much that it will not be terribly difficult for the company to beat expectations and come out with something that is less bad than everyone is prepared for.
And the Caterpillar stock is one to watch as well. I know that the trade issues, we get a nice gauge of how that is impacting business and manufacturing specifically when we see Caterpillar report.
Absolutely. It's a pure play on global trade. It's a pure play on global economic growth. Unfortunately, the outlook on both of those fronts has not been positive lately. It'll be interesting to see how Caterpillar refers to the business conditions, particularly outside the U.S. So absolutely, you're correct. The results from both of these companies will set the tone for the rest of today's training session. And then we have Microsoft coming out after the bell. Microsoft has been an impressive performer, particularly in the cloud business, and they'll set the tone for tomorrow's open.
Shiraz, the couple of sectors I wanted to focus in on, the tech sector, still a drag. What's going on with tech?
So with tech, you're correct. The expectation is for an 11% decline in earnings. And as we in Q3, and as we saw with Texas Instruments last evening and Micron earlier, a couple of weeks back, a big drag on tech is from the semiconductor space. And the semis account for about a sixth of the sector's total earnings. It's a cyclical downtime for the semiconductor space. They have trade overhang over over their business as well. If you strip out the chips from the tech sector as a whole, then the decline drops by about half. There are some other major big companies like Google, Apple, and a few others that have tough year-over-year comparisons. Tech is a very big sector, Steve. And overall, the earnings outlook for technology, when we think about tech, we think about companies like Google and Apple and Amazon and Facebook and Twitter. Overall, the earnings outlook for those faster-growing companies still remains positive.
We always see the finance sector report first, generally, when it comes to the quarterly earnings. We've seen a lot of those out already. How did finance do?
Finance did very well. It's a reaffirmation of the narrative we discussed earlier, the issue of low expectations and companies doing better than those low expectations, and also the lack and or absence of any negative commentary about current business trends. In fact, if anything, the overall tone and substance of management commentary about current business conditions was positive and reassuring. Finance companies had in all of their core businesses, whether it's the lending to households and businesses, whether it's mortgages, whether it's capital markets and investment banking, there were no unusually negative or bad trends. And on the whole, they beat EPS and revenue estimates at margins above what they have been doing in recent quarters. And the trend on the guidance front has also been reassuring and positive. So overall, positive results, and that's the reason why finance has done really well this earnings season.
All right, Shiraz, we appreciate you being on and sharing your insight with us as always. Thank you.
Glad to be with you, Steve.
Shiraz Mian, Director of Research at Zacks Equity Research. You can find them online at Zacks.com.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Some breaking earnings news this morning. Our conversation from the last half hour about Caterpillar. Caterpillar's just reported quarter three 2019 earnings. Big miss on revenue and earnings per share, EPS. Revenue came in at $12.8 billion. Wall Street investment analysts were expecting $13.41 billion. EPS at $2.66. The Street was expecting $2.87. The company's also lowered its yearly profit and share outlook. The stock this morning taking a big hit, down nearly 6.5% in after-hours trading. So a big miss for Caterpillar. The ticker symbol CAT earnings report out this morning. Our attention now turns to this tight job market. We've reported many times how employers are having a hard time filling positions, and one big bank thinks it might have an answer to get more employees on board. J.P. Morgan announcing this week it wants to give people with criminal records a second chance at getting a job. And we want to talk a little bit about that this morning. Of course, first thing about it is that the job market has been very, very tight, with the lowest unemployment rate in many, many years, many, many decades. And that's causing problems for companies to hire the right people, the people it needs and the right people. J.P. Morgan had previously talked about hiring people with criminal convictions for some of their entry-level jobs, like processing and account servicing. The United States loses about $78 billion, between $78 and $87 billion in annual GDP, excluding people who have criminal records from the workforce. Studies have shown that providing education and opportunities also reduces repeat offenders, people going back into crime, into the world of crime. And so it's important to have some of these companies do some of this hiring. J.P. Morgan making this announcement earlier this week. Some of the jobs, of course, you're not going to be hired at the bank if you've been a bank robber. But one of the studies that we focus in on about recidivism, as it's been called, shows how the education system that happens in jail, in prisons, and immediately after that, the opportunities that are provided to people after they get out of jail, shows that the recidivism rates go down if training, job training, and other skills are applied to some of these employees who would otherwise have problems getting a job. J.P. Morgan has now banned a box, as it's called, on their employment forms, which ask prospective employees whether or not they have criminal records or not. The financial institutions like J.P. Morgan are regulated by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation as far as hiring goes. The agency relaxed its rules last year that's allowing companies like J.P. Morgan to do some of this hiring, but there's still plenty of employers requiring the disclosure of prior convictions, and that poses a barrier to entry. That box for many, if it's not checked, might even come up during a job interview, but even that's changing in some states who have now banned their companies from asking those questions. Because of the unemployment rate being much higher for Americans with records for those than those without, it's estimated 27% of the roughly 5 million formerly incarcerated people in the country don't have an opportunity to get a job. That's compared with about 3.5% for the United States as a whole. A record that is eligible for pardon to get expunged shouldn't matter for a job applicant, according to some experts. But if you robbed a bank again, chances are you're not going to get hired at J.P. Morgan. Last year, 10% of its hires, 2,100 people, had some sort of criminal record. That's according to some of the stats that J.P. Morgan reported earlier this week. Crimes ranged from disorderly conduct to personal drug possessions and DUI charges. But again, this is a major investment, a major move forward by one of the biggest banks in the country. It includes cities like Chicago, Detroit, and Nashville for this hiring effort by J.P. Morgan. We want to move on. We have a little file here that we keep for days like today when we have a segment that doesn't pan out. And one of those is how to negotiate a salary. This is something that, and we'll bring in Bennett Wakenight, who's the executive producer of The Opening Bell, who I think, just like me, when you go into get a new job, when you go in and have that hiring meeting, I'm always pretty timid about asking for what I really, really want. And then later on down the line, I talk to coworkers who negotiated a little harder, and I realize what they've done and how they've been successful. This is a painful thing.
It definitely is a painful thing. But I think where you mentioned how you've talked to other coworkers and other peers and other friends about their previous encounters with negotiating salaries, I think that's the biggest point to take away, that we should be learning off of other people's experiences. obviously not everybody can be able to apply, whether it's a very articulated, you know, point-based approach to saying this is what I deserve based on this, this, this. It's a little bit different for everybody, but I think sharing those experiences and looking to past experiences is the way to go about it and kind of lessen that timid approach to negotiating.
Yeah, and I think part of it is, you know, I've been pretty lucky, and I think you have as well early in your career, that you don't jump from job to job, so you don't have to put these skills to use very often because you stay with the company. But that research, whether it's with your colleagues currently or with past colleagues, is the number one thing to do when you go in to negotiate a salary. Make sure you have all of the information in hand. Make sure you know exactly what that company does and how you can impact that. Also, go in and have a resume that really shows what you can do, what you have done. I think a lot of people put together resumes that are just sort of chronological, and they're like, I was here, I did this, I was here, I did this. Try to find, try to meld this resume with the company you're going for. So if you have good communication skills, your social media skills, play that up as a big factor in your resume. And again, the social media part of this might actually help you get the job. If you have a clean and non-offensive social media presence, these are things that employers are looking for.
Yeah, and going back to the resume part as well, this is a data-driven world that we're living in, and a lot of these, at least some part of the resume building process or the searching process from an employer standpoint is going to be data-driven, and that's going to be whether it's keyword searches or things that stand out in the resume that these companies are looking for. A lot of these are algorithms that they're using or things that they just need to be able to pick out as they're looking through thousands and thousands of these resumes. So maybe taking keywords or hotkeys from those job descriptions or what your original job description is will be able to help later down the line when you can look back to either what you did, what you will be doing, and use that as a negotiation factor.
One of the other things, and back to the social media presence, I mentioned cleaning up your social media presence, your profile, some of the things that you've done on there. Obviously, it's hard to delete things that are on there, but you want to make your social media presence professional and networking worthy. So look at it through the lens of a potential employer who maybe, again, they'll find you through those algorithms, but when they do find you and select you as a candidate, they may do a deeper dive on your social media, so make sure that's cleaned up. Here's a big one, too, that I don't think a lot of people think of. In this digital world, a lot of us are always looking at our phones. I don't know about you, but I communicate a lot by text message now. I don't do many phone calls anymore, and emails I do a lot of as well. The verbal communication part of this, practice with somebody. Practice an interview with somebody. Make sure that when you go in for an interview, or even if you go in to ask for a raise at your current job, that your communication skills are not rusty.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things. At the end of the day, this is two people having a conversation, and you know, this isn't the end of the world if it doesn't go your way too, but that's how things go. That's how conversations go. That's how businesses is approaches. And you have to be prepared to be able to encounter a roadblock. And maybe that roadblock is, no, we can't give you that raise, or no, this is the number that we're firm at. And those are the conversations that you're going to inevitably have, maybe not now, maybe a little bit later in your career, but those definitely will be encountered later on. So just mentally preparing for those and literally preparing for those with other friends, or even the cliche way of practicing in a mirror, right, is one of those ways of getting ready for that conversation.
And prepare for no. And the way you can prepare for no in a positive way, let's say you go in and ask for a raise and the answer is no. Think about things, alternatives that the company might consider. Like, for instance, perhaps if you're in a company that has stock incentives or has a commission, maybe that could be bumped up. Maybe also ask for more flex time, flexible hours in the work week that you could use maybe to work at home, or ask for a little bit more vacation, maybe even paying for continued education. And I don't know, Bennett, we've had this conversation on the program a lot too. See if there is a student loan benefit. See if there is something inside of those benefits that might impact your financial situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is a conversation, and it goes back. If your superior or, you know, the boss or anybody who you're talking to when it comes to this, if they're taking out the time to listen to you, to talk about this, if you've set the scene as to this is what I would like to come in and talk to you about, they're taking time out of their day to listen and try to figure out ways to make both parties win. So they're invested in it as well. Of course, you know, they're trying to keep the company moving and save a few pennies here and there. But at the end of the day, they're taking time and they want to see you succeed and be happy as you walk out of that office as well. So having that alternative is one of the most important things as if you encounter that no in that first conversation, you know, having an option to say, all right, here's an alternative. That's definitely something that will help both parties win at the end of the day.
A couple of other quick tips here. Again, negotiating, how to negotiate a salary when you're in that meeting. Mind basic etiquette. Don't be late. Know the interviewer's name. Turn off your phone. Put it in your pocket. Be engaged. Maintain eye contact. The eye contact is a pretty important one. A firm handshake also helps as well. And then double down on what works. If this is a second interview, if you've been invited back for a second interview or there's a series of meetings, find something that struck you positively about the prior meetings that you've had. Try to build on that. And then, again, don't be afraid to have the money conversation. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want. The answer may be no, but it may also be yes. So there we go. A couple of tips to negotiate a salary from one of the job investment analysts at Goldman Sachs. We pulled that off. I thought that was pretty interesting to share with you this morning, because I know some people will probably be asking for money as we come closer to the end of the year. It is time to update ag and commodities this morning. Let's check in with Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As you look at market activity yesterday, you find China all over the place. First of all, lean hog futures dropped, pressured by abundant near-term hog supplies and concern that U.S. pork export demand would not be large enough to absorb the expected surplus of meat produced. Hopes for a jump in Chinese demand for U.S. pork have supported hog futures at times in recent months, but not yesterday. February lean hog contract down $2.02 a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract down $1 a hundredweight. And the October feeder cattle contract managed to close higher, up 17 cents a hundredweight. But probably the biggest China influence yesterday was in soybeans at the Chicago Board of Trade. Hopes of fresh export sales to China after Beijing gave major crushers waivers to import U.S. soybeans without any retaliatory tariffs. That was the announcement that China had offered Chinese and international soybean processors waivers that would exempt the companies from steep tariffs on imports of up to 10 million tons of U.S. soybeans. So at the end of the day yesterday, we had the November soybean contract up 8¾ cents a bushel. Corn also managed a higher close, the December contract up a penny, but wheat gave back some more of its gainers, down 6 cents a bushel. That's a look at markets and agribusiness. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, October the 23rd. The House Price Index for August is due today. Housing industry analysts are forecasting an increase of 0.3% over July. Also today, we'll see the Mortgage Bankers Association weekly look at mortgage applications. The EIA Petroleum Status Report is due out as well. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg scheduled to testify in front of the House Financial Services Committee, one of the big events happening in terms of real time. That's at about 9 a.m. Chicago time this morning. Of course, earnings galore. Anthem, Blackstone, Boeing, Caterpillar, Hilton, Invesco, eBay, Microsoft, PayPal, Tesla, all reporting quarterly earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, October the 23rd.